While we're hearing good news about unemployment rates dropping and more people joining the workforce, poverty still faces, people facing poverty still face a lot of hurdles. And that means thousands of Wisconsinites are living in income insecurity. For proof, just look to the state free and reduced lunch program. As of last year, more than half of all students enrolled in the state qualified for subsidized lunches because their families don't make enough money. This hour, we'll talk about an innovative approach in Eau Claire County that aims to combat poverty, which could serve as a model for other communities in the state and beyond. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. I'm pleased to be joined in studio by a group of people on the front lines of the poverty discussion. First, I'd like to introduce Mike Huggins. He is a member of the board of directors for Clear Vision Eau Claire and a co-chair for the Poverty Summit, which I teased in the lead. We'll get more into that in just a bit. Mike Huggins, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you here. Sheng Zhang is a member of the board of directors for Clear Vision Eau Claire, and she's also on the She's a co-chair of the Poverty Summit as well. Sheng Zhang, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you, Mike. Or Rich.
Rich.
Morning.
Morning. And Colin Hawkins is the director for planning and development at Western Dairyland Community Action Agency, which has offices in Eau Claire and Independence. Colin Hawkins, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And Sarah Ferber is the Chippewa Valley organizer for Expo. That's a program that aims to end mass incarceration and eliminate discrimination against people formerly incarcerated. Sarah Ferber, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So first off, I'm going to start with Colin Hawkins so I can adjust some microphones here, but the federal government has a very specific definition of what poverty is. But I would say for a lot of people, it's more of a feeling than a mathematical, definition or equation. So, the feelings include things like, I can't seem to catch up, can't seem to get ahead. How do community action agencies like Western Dairyland and groups like Clear Vision define it?
Well, that's a great question to start off with, really. As you mentioned, a lot of our programs that we offer do have qualification levels based on federal poverty level, based on county median income. There's, various sliding scales that give people the ability to participate in our programs. But how we actually define it, how we actually look at it in the community, it does vary. Federal poverty level itself is a very nominal variable. Either you're poor or you're not poor. It can't really give you a measure of how poor, how people are feeling, mm-hmm. What the prevalence is in the community, what the feeling is in the community, what support systems exist, and how those run. Now, our service area is Buffalo, Eau Claire, Jackson, Trempealeau County. So we're about half urban, suburban, and about half rural. Mm-hmm. And so people experience poverty very differently depending on, where they live, whether they're living in rural poverty, whether they're living in urban poverty. But we certainly do see that there is a sense out there, and maybe we've seen it with recent elections, maybe we've seen it with recent phenomenon, but people feel like something is not right. People feel like the system has let them down. People feel like they're getting behind a little bit further every day.
And same question goes and either one, Shen Zhang or Mike Huggins could take this. How are the folks with the Poverty Summit defining poverty? Because to combat something, you have to know what you're dealing with. And while a lot of people kind of know and have a gut feeling, what are the measures that you're looking at?
Well, that's one of the reasons we talk in terms of poverty and income insecurity. Is to recognize the fact that it's more than folks that are simply below a federal threshold level. So we're looking at folks that are experiencing that sense of insecurity due to income. We drew a lot of our original definition based on the city's comprehensive plan, Eau Claire County's reports, and so forth, that were defining that as an issue. It's interesting, as we got into the process, the United Way report, the Alice report, came out, which found that, as I recall, about 47% of the households in Eau Claire County are below that Alice level, which means that they're kind of one paycheck away. If you actually take mm-hmm. into account their actual costs, You know, these are households that experience that insecurity on a regular basis. So we're looking not only at the folks that fall below the threshold level, but basically half the households in Eau Claire County that are dealing with that situation. They could be one incident, one paycheck away from very severe economic issues. And those are the things that we're trying to address.
And that's what I found interesting when I was looking up some data for all of this. There are so many different, you know, the Alice Report is one. There's the COWS. There's the UW-Madison has the Institute for Poverty Research, has another, you know, they're at 10%. Alice is higher. You know, how do we make sense of all of that, Sheng Zhang?
I don't know. I guess just taking everything into account and the fact that it's not just one organization defining it, but, you know, taking in the fact that everybody is, you know, mm-hmm. just being open-minded to see that there is more than just one definition. So
the 47% figure from the Alice numbers, that sounds very stark, but when I looked at some of the county-by-county things, it was more like 10% with regard to the Institute for Poverty Research. Well, either way, how big of an issue is it for Eau Claire County, and what are you guys hearing from the Clear Vision process, and you know, so far, Mike Huggins?
Well, I think what we've seen, given the fact the folks that showed up at the first meeting, because you never know, you know, how many people will come out as you're talking about community issues, and if you look at the standing room only experience we had, I think that was a reflection that a lot of people, as Colin said, a lot of people say, you know, there's something wrong here. This is not what our community should be like. Mm-hmm. And however you define it, and to some extent, it may be less of an issue of defining, you know, what is poverty, rather than recognizing we have a whole bevy of issues that we need to deal with, and how do we do that? So the focus of Clear Vision is more on bringing people together and trying to get some sense of shared commitment to some type of public purpose that we can act on that will make the situation better. I don't think that any of us are looking at you're going to end or solve problem, solve poverty. That's not what we're looking at. We're trying to improve the quality of life in the community for people that are in that situation.
I want to remind people listening to the program this morning that you can call in. 1-800-228-5615 is the number. If you have if you or someone you know have faced poverty or are living in poverty, please feel free to share your story. You can be as anonymous or non-anonymous as you like. And it would really help people, I think, understand the issues and the issue better. 1-800-228-5615. There's a lot of life events that kind of cause people to fall into poverty. We already heard that, you know, some people are one paycheck away. You know, you don't have savings built up. Any number of things can happen. Sarah Ferber, I wanted to go to you because you bring an interesting perspective here. So Expo is a program all about helping people who have been incarcerated get past the stigmatization of that and deal with a whole range of issues, including poverty. So as far as life events, what kind of things can happen to a person that gets them in this spot?
Well, if a person has a drug addiction problem, for example, and that leads to a crime, once a person has that felony label, all of these issues of poverty that are already there for non-felons become that much worse. So now they aren't able to get some of the assistance that's available to the greater community because they screen people out based on a criminal conviction.
Mm-hmm. All right. And Colin Hawkins from Western Dairylands, you know, a lot of years of doing this. What kind of common themes do you hear from folks that are being served by the agency?
Yeah, we talk about this a lot, particularly with some of our homeless programs, how people often are one step from homelessness and housing insecurity issues. What we see are two sort of distinct populations. One is our most recent program that I think has gotten a little bit of attention community-wide has been our permanent supportive housing program, which helps house chronically homeless men and women in the community. At the same time, while that's a really exciting, really great, really groundbreaking program, that's sort of this idea of housing first that's come out of Salt Lake City, Utah, the people that sort of are remaining in need, that are almost being left behind in the wake of some of these really new and exciting programs, are what we see from a lot of our clients. A lot of times it's single men, single women, particularly single mothers in the community, who are one paycheck away from homelessness. Literally, they're working at a job for low wages, and they get sick, they have an issue, they have to travel, they have to take care of a sick loved one, and they find themselves out of a job, and they find themselves without any source of income or savings to back it up.
And so how do we square this with the fact that there's, you know, we keep hearing about low unemployment, the more people working. I mean, you've got people try to spin, people in power spin all kinds of different numbers different ways. So how do we square the fact that, or make sense of the fact that there's still these high percentages of people in poverty, despite the fact that the economy is, by a lot of measures, improving? Mike Huggins?
Let me add, one of the things that led Clear Vision to look at this issue a couple of years ago, I was speaking with Daryl Tufte, the planning director for the city, and the city had just completed its comprehensive plan, and the number one issue cited by citizens was poverty. And I was talking to Daryl about that, and he said that as they looked at that issue doing the comprehensive plan and dived into the data, what they found was, even though the economy overall was recovering, that it was not having an impact on a sizable part of the population that fell, you know, in the bottom quarter, the bottom two quarters. So the folks that were falling below that federal threshold, or the folks that fell in the ALICE threshold, you know, one paycheck away, their situation wasn't improving. Overall numbers look good for the county, but you had a sizable part of individuals and households that were not, their situation was not improving. So it's not reflected sometimes in the overall data that often gets reported at the state level or the national level. And that's one of the reasons that we felt like this was an issue perhaps we need to take a closer look at.
And when we come back from our break, we'll talk more about the overall problem, and then we'll get into some of the specifics of what is going to be happening through these poverty summit meetings in Eau Claire. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We've got wide open phone lines. Let us know what you think about this, what experiences you've got with poverty. We'd love to hear it. 800-228-5615. This is the West Side. We'll be back after just this short break.
Support for WPR comes from UW Credit Union, providing a team of dedicated financial consultants who help members plan for retirement with services like 401k rollovers. UWCU.org. Your best interest always comes first. Contributors to WPR include Budget Bicycle Center and White Winter Winery. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Go to WPR.org/sponsor.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about poverty in western Wisconsin and an interesting approach in Eau Claire to rally community members from all different corners of business, of, you know, residential, of government, to try to address it. Basically, a series of brainstorming sessions. Clear Vision, you might know or might remember, had a big role in getting the discussion going about the Confluence Performing Arts Center. And now they're throwing their weight behind a really big issue in the region. 800-228-5615 is the number to call. I'm joined by Mike Huggins. He is a member of the board of directors for Clear Vision Eau Claire. Sheng Zhang is also a member of the board of directors. The two of them are the co-chairs for the Poverty Summit. Sarah Ferber is an organizer with the Chippewa Valley Expo. That's a program that aims to end mass incarceration and eliminate discrimination against those who have been incarcerated. And Colin Hawkins is a director of planning and development for Western Dairyland Community Action Agency in Western Wisconsin. 1-800-228-5615. So, as far as I want to know a little bit about the differences. Eau Claire is the city, of course, is the more rural or more urban area in western Wisconsin. The county as a whole is very rural, except for the city center. So this must be an interesting challenge for folks on the Poverty Summit leadership because you've got two different issues, really. I mean, the transportation I know is a big issue in the rural areas, and it's got to be different in the cities. So, Shengjiang, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about, are there different groups involved in focusing on the rural, or how do you make sense of those two different realities that folks face?
Well, that's a interestingly phrased question. The Arts Poverty Summit is open to all of Eau Claire County.
Right.
It is not just citywide. We want to make clear of that. We understand that there are other smaller cities and towns on the in Eau Claire County that wants to be a part of the conversation. So we have in the past opened up our doors. Specifically, there was the Augusta Senior Center. We reached out to, or they had reached out to us. They wanted us to go out there mm-hmm. and speak to them, just like do a small little community session out there. So we did. A big reason why we are doing our sessions is downtown at Grace Lutheran is the fact that it is just so in the centered for those people with transportation issues, or just the fact that it is a well-known community landmark. So,
and some of the challenges faced by people living in poverty in the rural versus is more urban landscape. Colin Hawkins, what are some of the big differences there?
There's quite a few. As I mentioned before, we run about 50% urban versus rural in our service area. Mm-hmm. Eau Claire, as you mentioned, Altoona, the metropolitan statistical area of Eau Claire is really our only sort of non-rural area in our service area. And there's a great number of challenges that face our rural communities. Rural homelessness is a particular one. It's a really difficult, sort of insidious one. It's difficult to tease out of data. It's difficult to find because often there's shame factors. There's community support networks is a big one. That's a big one that you hear about. And it's sort of intuitive that we hear about these rural communities where neighbors look out for each other, where fellow parishioners look out for people in their congregation. And that certainly has always been a major sort of infrastructure that exists in rural communities, this really non-specific, just neighbors taking care of neighbors. Mm-hmm. But what we've seen in a lot of our service areas, there's been a lot of changes and a lot of upheaval in those communities. We see a lot of young people leaving for the city. There aren't jobs anymore. A lot of these are one-industry towns. You have Ashley Furniture in Trempealeau County, which is one of the major employers. So, when something happens with Ashley Furniture, if they are going to hire more people or if they're going to lay off people, it has a major impact on those communities. So young people are looking for jobs elsewhere. And what you have is you have a growing, burgeoning, significant burgeoning Latino community, communities of color in some of our rural areas. And so what happens is those are changes to what the community looks like, how the community functions. And so that, in itself can really sort of upset some of these historically, sort of under appreciated neighbor helping neighbor communities that existed and infrastructure that existed for helping those in need.
And Mike Huggins, the balance through the meetings that you've got, how do you strike that balance, I guess? I mean, in terms of not, because I know for this show, it's easy to get into the trap of only focusing on Eau Claire because it's big enough that there are many different issues that you can focus on. But how is the summit reaching out to the outer corners?
Well, it's an imperfect process. I mean, we just to recognize the dynamics of the situation. So it's a reflection, in part, it's a reflection who is able to make it to the meetings. Although I think that reflects a variety of perspectives about and experiences of what people have. So we recognize that it's certainly a challenge if you do face-to-face meetings. It's always a challenge for people getting transportation to get there or childcare if they're there. So those are the limitations of the meetings. We have done meetings outside of the city of Eau Claire to try and reach out to people. We're trying to develop our website to do some, digital communication. So part of it is just awareness that it's a challenge. I would say, though, that as we approach this from the beginning, It was a recognition. That's why we took the focus on Eau Claire County, all 100,000 people in Eau Claire County, recognizing that to some extent we have to be cautious about making this rural-urban split because the feeling we had in putting the process together was basically one of the idea that in Eau Claire County, we all do better when we all do better. So we can't simply say, well, if the city's doing okay, that's fine, because there are so many interconnections between the people living and working in Augusta, and they have family in Eau Claire and vice versa, and the school systems, that you just can't clearly, demark, you know, who is where and what those impacts are. So from our perspective, even though we have challenges of getting people to meetings and how we reach out, it's very much what do we do to improve the overall situation for all of the Eau Claire County. And one of the challenges is, what do you do about the lack of access, you know, transportation access to get to resources?
And overall, speaking for Western Dairyland, Colin Hawkins, what is the most pressing issue? I mean, you mentioned homelessness, and I know that's been a big push. There's been a lot of success with the rapid rehousing program.
Right.
And I know that Western Dairyland actually just hired somebody to work with landlords in order to try to, you know, convince them that it's worth taking a chance on someone who's been living in homelessness. So is there a list of top concerns versus, you know, not as high on the list?
There are. There absolutely are. When we're dealing, we actually just completed our triennial needs assessment, where we take a look at our communities that we serve and what some of the most pressing issues are within those communities. The one you hit on that perhaps is not that surprising to many people is, in fact, transportation. Transportation is a huge issue. The lack of, you know, public transit infrastructure outside of Eau Claire, the city of, the limited access people have to ride share programs, things like that. That's a huge issue. Housing is another one, affordable housing, how it exists, how it doesn't exist, the communities that we serve. These are big ones. There's some more specific ones when you get to, historically, there's been issues with lack of dental care, particularly in rural communities when you're talking about medical care and access to medical care. The number of children coming into some of these rural schools with dental caries is phenomenal, and it's a problem that we see in our heads starting as young as some of our Head Start centers. And fortunately, we have a wonderful hygienist and dental care program that helps to sort of alleviate or ameliorate some of those issues. But that's another one that exists certainly within our poverty areas, or excuse me, our rural areas. And finally, another big one has been sort of one that's the same that you see in Eau Claire, but with sort of different considerations, and that is access to childcare, affordable childcare. The number of centers, the number of registered childcare providers in our rural counties is significantly lower than it needs to be to care for some of these, especially shift workers. You know, you have a lot of shift workers at Ashley, at Golden Plum, some of these other places, and so there's definitely demand for childcare, affordable childcare.
Now, with regards to someone who's is in a poverty situation, maybe looking for transitional housing and also has a record, Sarah Ferber, you want to expand on some of the challenges as far as top down?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the only reason why I have housing right now is through the Western Dairyland program. So I'm actually a recipient of that Housing First. And one thing that I think is important to know, so my homeless situation, being that I have two children, looked different than what the federal definition of homelessness is.
Right.
So federally, you have to be staying in a car someplace that's not suitable, or on the streets, not suitable for human habitat. But with families, or in my situation, even when I was making bad decisions, I always made sure my kids had somewhere to go, right? So it was difficult when I first was applying for the program. How do we count the times that I was homeless? Because in my mind, I had been homeless for 18 months, you know, but the federal definition, which is what they use for the Housing First, so that's something really, I think, to think about, you know, is what does homelessness look like for families versus, you know, individuals? And then also, the reason, you know, in the beginning I said that I wouldn't have housing if it weren't for this program, when I have historically went and looked for housing on my own, people would like me. They would, you know, it seemed like they were going to give me the place. And then because of some of the treatment that I've been through, I've been told to be honest up front, right? So we'd have this great look at the house. They'd seem like they liked me. I would be honest and tell them that I have a conviction history, and their face would change, and the way that they react to me would completely change. And it was very, very difficult to get a chance with anyone. And the only places that I usually could ever find to go were places that historically I had used in those neighborhoods, and so not necessarily the neighborhoods that you want someone who's trying to recover, you know, from criminality and from addiction. You don't want them all to only be able to go to certain neighborhoods, and that's kind of how Eau Claire is set up right now.
Yeah, that's interesting. The easiest place to get a rental is kind of the place you want to get away from.
Exactly.
And it's interesting.
Exactly.
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got a story to share or just a question to ask, let us know. 800-228-5615. I'm joined by Mike Huggins, Sheng Zhang, Colin Hawkins, and Sarah Ferber. So let's explain a little bit, kind of going back, I guess, about what the Poverty Summit actually is structurally. How it works. Mike Huggins, it's basically, as far as I know, a series of brainstorming sessions with community members. Am I getting that right?
Well, close. I mean, I would split it into, at this point, two phases. So right now we're about halfway through a six-month planning phase, working with the stakeholders that come to a series of seven meetings. And we're working through a process that allows people to name the problems and issues that they see, and then go through a facilitated process to kind of narrow that down and start to develop action teams, which we've done. We now have nine action groups. Action teams have been identified. Then we'll be working with the groups for them to develop their action plans, what strategies they see. Complete that in March, and then in March begin about a year and a half, 2 year implementation phase where we'll support the teams in trying to implement their plans. So that's kind of the process we're in. We've had about 250 people participate in the face-to-face meetings, identified over 300 issues more or less, and have narrowed those down, like I say, to nine action groups. And as we go through that process, it's a very open process, so people can come in at any point and still certainly come in to the summit meeting at Grace Lutheran. There will be opportunities to join and work with the action teams as they begin their implementation process.
So nine action teams. What are some of the their focuses, Sheng Zhang?
Like Mike said, out of the 250 participants or stakeholders, they identified over 300 issues, and then from there we were able to narrow it down. They were able to narrow it down to 17 priority issues, and then from that 17 priority issues that they feel are need, they were able to choose nine out of those 17, and some of those could be are things such as transportation and access to resources, and it's not just limited to that. You know, it's wider than that, because what we also did was we also narrowed or grouped categories together, like community connections and access to resources. Those were grouped together. Family stability and children, those were grouped together. Other things were expo reentry, housing and homelessness. Those were put together. Income and
skills.
Income and job skills. Those were put together. So, it's very awesome just to hear from the community what they think needs to be addressed. And now our process, Clear Vision's process, is to help them get from those ideas and these conversations and get those actions going.
Have there been any surprises? What I mean by that is, have there been any issues that came up, you know, from the people that how they see the problem versus what community action agencies or you know, the federal government or state government sees as some of the issues? Was there anything that kind of was at odds like that?
Well, I maybe Colin could speak to that issue. One of the things we were trying to do is create a space where both agencies working on these issues came together, as well as people that I'd say, you know, regular citizens, you know, they weren't part of an institutional setting. So as I looked at it, I don't know that I saw any surprises. It was interesting to see the large number of people that identified public awareness and stigma as significant issues dealing with that. I would have thought that myself, but I was a little bit surprised to see that clearly identified, and the notion of public narrative of that clearly identified by the participants. So I thought that was, if not a surprise, I thought that was very significant about the people that were able to identify that.
And Colin Hawkins, I mean, anytime I have anyone on talking about poverty or homelessness, the stigma always comes up, the discussion.
Right,
but
right.
But so have you? Were you involved with the process as well? And did you get anything out of that?
Absolutely. I'm a participant in the process. And in fact, I'm so glad Mike brought that up, because I'm in fact on that action team. And that was also for me a surprise in a pleasant way. Not a surprise in the fact that I didn't think that it was an issue in the community,
but I
went in. I won't say I was skeptical, but I've been to a lot of summits, to a lot of conferences, to a lot of sort of roundtable discussions on poverty, and that's one that people tend to always miss, and it's something that we have identified in particular as definitely an issue related to poverty. And so I kind of went in thinking, okay, give it a chance. And then when people really brought that up and really identified that and were able to single that out, I thought they're onto something here, and this is a really great opportunity.
So Clear Vision says that let me step back here. What can Clear Vision bring to this fight, you know, against poverty that, and I'm not trying to pit one against the other, but what is the idea? What can you bring to the table that agencies like Western Dairyland or WestCap or any number of them can't? Or what might you be able to add to what they're already doing?
I would put it more as what we could add as an organization. I think there are two things. One, I think Clear Vision is able to serve as a convener and an umbrella to create a space where all the different agencies, including government, can come together and participate and try to address this issue, along with people that aren't coming from organizations but just are bringing their experience. So Clear Vision can help create that space and provide an opportunity for multiple agencies and governments. Frankly, I think it would be hard for a local government to convene a summit about poverty. I think that would simply be a politically challenging thing to do. So we can provide that umbrella space. The second thing is Clear Vision can contribute an approach to public problem solving that we've worked on the last, probably 8 or 9 years. And in fact, it was the process that was recognized a couple of years ago with an innovation award from Harvard's Ash Center. So there's something about the process. It's not new, but perhaps the way that we have developed that in the community. So I think creating the space and also this notion of a different way of going about solving problems is what Clear Vision can contribute.
Colin Hawkins, I mean, there are meetings all the time that you're involved with, whether it's within the agency or outside. So what are you seeing as additional info that you're getting from the Clear Vision summits?
Right. I mean, we do. We have a ton of meetings. There's a lot of different stakeholders in all of our communities.
But is it hard to get all these different facets under one roof?
Yes. That's exactly what it is. Mike hit the nail right on the head. As a facilitator, I was blown away to walk in and see people from so many different community groups, so many different community stakeholders. And I think a really great thing that Mike sort of touched on too is this idea that not only do you have agencies working to alleviate poverty within this room, you have other groups for whom, you know, poverty is a concern, and then you also have people who have maybe some of the resources that need to be employed in order to effectively contribute to these solutions. And so what that really does is it puts everybody who has some sort of say in this fight together in the same room and says, let's work on this. Let's work together and see what we can do. And I've really appreciated that aspect of the poverty summits.
We've got our first call of the morning, and let's go to them now. Mark, are you still there? Mark and Altoona?
Yeah, I managed to hang in. I just got done listening to some tapes on liberal humanism and how liberal humans substitute new words and reorganization for results. And I'm hearing about stakeholders and facilitators and all this and that. But when China had their revolution, the first thing the Chinese communists did was provide daycare free, 24 hours, to all women. And I think I've been listening to this conversation since about 1968, and it just keeps getting worse. And I'm wondering, you know, what part you may have played in the election of Donald Trump by providing meetings as opposed to results.
All right. Well, I'm not sure where to go with that.
I'll jump into that, Mark. I mean, I'm not quite sure of the perspective you're coming from, but the focus, speaking as a member working with Clear Vision, the focus for us is always moving from talking about issues, which is very important that people have an opportunity to have conversation with others in their community about what's important. But our focus is, okay, how do we move to doing something in our local community that has an impact on the people that live here? So, I mean, that's I think, the common theme throughout all of what the work is and what the summit is. It's really a large conversation of people talking to their neighbors about what concerns them, what's important, and what do we do to make this a better place.
And do you think that – I think, you know, one of Mark's points is really valid, the fact that a lot of people get frustrated by a conversation that keeps happening, but yet the problem still seems to exist. So, and I wanted to kind of tie that into with the idea that it seemed like what you've heard from some of the groups was that there's a growing awareness and willingness to talk about, you know, the poverty. Is that because people are – why do you think that is, Mike Huggins? And do you think that that might be able to – get more action out of these meetings despite, you know, efforts in the past?
Yeah, well, I think part of it is how you do the meetings.
And, yeah, right.
I mean, I've spent 35, 40 years doing this, and process matters. So how you set up a meeting, how you provide opportunities for people to talk about things is important. And one of the things we do is allow people to talk about the values, the individual values that are important to them. So many times in our public settings, we don't get a chance to do that. So we're trying to provide a process, an opportunity for people to connect their values, respect, honesty, love, compassion, connect their values to things they see that may threaten those values in their community to what they can do working with others to have an impact on that. And that's basically the process we're trying to do.
Colin Hawkins?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you hear that a lot, this idea that there's a lot of talk and not a lot of solutions. I think that one of the great things about the society we live in, the culture we come from, is that we do discuss these issues, that when we move judiciously. We know what problems, what concerns we're trying to alleviate, and we take action toward them. Our agency last year weatherized 300 homes. You know, those are 300 homeowners in the community who have access to warmer houses. Sometimes they could see their breath when they woke up in the morning. So I kind of reject the notion that nothing is being done. I think that sometimes people aren't aware of what is being done in their community. And so I think that the importance of poverty summits and things like that is that it brings together people who are doing the things every day, day in, day out. And it says, how can we all get on the same page? How can we organize to effectively address the problems that we see and are able to identify across all of our agencies, across all of our perspectives within the community?
With that, let's take our final break. We've got plenty more discussion to come. And I'm joined by Sarah Ferber, Colin Hawkins, Sheng Zhang, and Mike Huggins, all folks on the front lines of dealing with poverty and all the issues, such a complicated tangle of issues that surround it. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call. We're talking about the Eau Claire Poverty Summit put on by Clear Vision and also the bigger problem that faces so many in our region. 1-800-228-5615. This is The West Side.
Hi, I'm WPR Director Mike Crane. There are 1,161 Wisconsinites listed on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C. Their photos are featured in Wisconsin Remembers, A Face for Every Name, an exhibit developed by WPR, WPT, and the Wisconsin Veterans Museum. A photo of the exhibit and details on how your community group can host Wisconsin Remembers is available at wpr.org/veterans.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from many small businesses. This Saturday is Small Business Saturday, a day that encourages shopping and dining at local businesses. WPR is proud of the support we receive from small businesses across the state. Support also comes from Green Routes and Explore Minnesota, presenting more than 100 local vendors serving food, beer, and wine at the Feast Local Foods Marketplace, December 3rd in Rochester, Minnesota. local-feast.org.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good Monday morning to you. Thanks for tuning us in. We're talking about a series of Poverty Summit meetings happening in Eau Claire, focused on the Eau Claire County, but of course the lessons learned can be used beyond. This is put on by Clear Vision. This is the group that helped foster the discussion about the Performing Arts Center that will be known as the Confluence Project that basically, I think, broke ground a couple weeks ago after a lot of planning. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got a story to share, please do. Feel free to stay as anonymous as you'd like. Otherwise, you can also post on our West Side Facebook page. And if you've missed part of the discussion, would like to listen again, or would like to listen to years' worth of archived programs, check out WPR.org, look for the shows link, and then you'll find the West Side tab. Click that, and you will have more audio than you'll know what to do with. So, we already talked about this a little bit, but Sheng Zhang, I wanted to ask you, people that are listening that might want to get involved, do they have to be part of an organization like Western Dairyland, or can they just show up at Grace Lutheran Church? I think the next one is December 1st?
1st, yes. Yeah. No, definitely you don't have to be involved with any organization or agency. This is a community open session. It is open for any and all community members, and you can come to any one or all of the meetings. It's a place that we want to start the conversation. We want to hear from everybody, you know, whether you have a personal story or experience that you want to share, or like Colin said, you know, or if you're coming from an organization, representing organization, having services to offer, you know, it's just a place that we can all come together and get on the same page.
And what kind of feedback do you get from people? This can go to either Yu Sheng or Mike Huggins, people that just are taking part in the, you know, people that aren't involved in a lot of big, deep thinking meetings like this. What kind of takeaways are they giving? What kind of feedback are you getting?
Well, of course, we do evaluation after every one of our sessions. So, right. But what I hear are probably two dominant thoughts. One, that they wish they had more time to talk at the meeting, which
sure.
I can tell you is an unusual response to public meetings. So that's a good thing. Three things. I think that people wish they had more time to talk. Every meeting we have, there is just like a buzz in the room. And like I say, having done this for a long time, you know when the room is dead and when it isn't. So there's a lot of energy. And I think the third thing is people see that it's a safe space, a safe civil space where they can have these conversations, because in many cases we're talking about things that kind of go right to the heart of what people are experiencing in their lives. So to be able to talk about that in a safe place is very important. That's what I've been hearing.
Sarah Ferber.
Yeah, I just wanted to say a lot of times, at least for me, when you're living in the life of poverty, right, you feel so alone and you don't realize that people even value what you have to say about it. And what's so awesome about the Poverty Summit is you're surrounded by not only people who have similar experiences as you, but also people in power, right? And they're valuing what you have to say. And that can be such an empowering thing, and it might be the first place that somebody's actually taken the time to listen to your story and listen to your opinions on how things could get better. And I think that's a big takeaway that happens.
But does, you know, a group like yours is very specific. Expo, the discrimination against people who have been incarcerated and have that criminal history that's kind of weighing them down, you want to get rid of all that. That seems more specific than what's happening at this meeting. So do you feel like maybe your message is kind of getting lost and swallowed up in this?
Well, I think in some, I wouldn't say lost and swallowed up. What I would say is that all of the issues of poverty are the same for someone who has a conviction history, but a little bit worse, mm-hmm. right? And so that's why I'm excited that Expo reentry issues did survive that cut and will be one of the issues that we work on, because we've all experienced a lot of the other things, but it just is like an added level of this conviction history now. And I think that kind of the same thing goes for both sides, is that, you know, people who get involved with Expo at first are skeptical that Expo itself can even make any changes, because our experience has been that people in power don't care what we have to say, you know, and having that opportunity and growing that empowerment has been big.
Mm-hmm. 800-228-5615. We can still take a quick call towards the end of the hour here. So these meetings right now, the December 1st and the January 19th, I believe, are planning action team meetings. Am I wrong on that?
No, pretty much that's
it. So what does that mean?
Well, that means we've, at the last meeting, we organized the groups, organized the teams. At the meeting on the 1st, now we'll combine. An important part of our process is that we have coaches that will support the teams in practicing the skills that we're providing training on and being consistent with our approach to problem solving. So we'll be matching coaches with the teams. And then the teams will start to actually do some of the further narrowing down to identify specific problems they want to work on. At the 19th, then, we'll start working on the action plan itself, how the teams can put together a measurable action plan, real milestone type of thing, and continue that process through March. So people can join at any point. At the same time, we're moving along from talking about a lot of stuff to narrowing down, and in March coming out with a very specific written action plan for each of the teams.
All right. I've got two quick follow-up questions for you, Mike Huggins. Why go from something, you know, clear vision with regard to the Confluence project? That was kind of a tangible thing. I mean, it was a big idea, got narrowed down, just like what's happening now. Why move from something that's tangible to something that's so amorphous and huge like poverty? Is it just because the time was right, or enough people were saying, let's do this, or why?
Yes to all the above. Okay. I mean, one that we saw, I mean, the purpose of Clear Vision is bring people together to deal with the issues that people are saying are important. And we were clearly seeing that poverty was being identified as that. The other part was, with our experience in the application process for the Ash Award and kind of a external recognition that we're onto something that works. Mm-hmm. We felt that, okay, let's test that. You know, like you said, Confluence was very specific physical development. We felt it was time to test this process on, let's deal with the issues that communities everywhere are dealing with. You know, whether it's poverty, whether it's climate change, pick a tough issue, and we want to see if we can make a dent on those type of issues.
Colin Hawkins?
Yeah, I think that to add on to what Mike was saying there, I think that, I mean, obviously not speaking on behalf of Clear Vision, but just in general as a resident in Eau Claire, what I've seen in the past few years has been this really amazing and miraculous movement toward development downtown, toward the creation of these really great, enriching sort of institutions within the community. And really what has to be the other side of that coin is taking care of the people who are falling through the cracks, taking care of the most vulnerable, because they really work hand in hand, if you think about it, because you can't have a downtown that's wonderful, beautiful, mm-hmm. and spectacular while there's still people sleeping on the streets, right? And so these are really connected issues. And while, you know, the Confluence is tangible, the idea that it represents is very much linked to alleviation of poverty.
Sure. Sheng Zhang, in your opinion, how exportable is this? I mean, I know the goals are, they're not quite there yet. As you narrow this down, there will be specific things that you hope to achieve. But this whole process, will this be usable for folks outside of the Eau Claire County?
Definitely. You know, I'm new to the board and I'm new to this whole process, but I'm learning as we're going just with everybody else. I definitely see that this Clear Vision's process that they have, they definitely know what they're doing. You know, it is definitely replicable. You know, like people can definitely repeat this process, and it can be applied to not just like just this one specific issue. It can be applied to any issue in other communities in, you know, not just in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. So I think that was like a big reason why we were able to attain that ASH award is because it is repeatable, you know, this process that they have down.
Funding is always an issue. And Colin Hawkins, I'm going to go to you right now. It takes a lot of money to offer assistance to those in poverty and to help lift them out and even to plan. And even internally, it takes a lot of money. So what's happening with the funding that you see from the federal state levels? Is it keeping up with inflation? Is it stagnant, declining?
Yeah. No, and not probably not surprisingly, I think, to people who pay attention, the funding has been, you know, either flat while prices and costs increase, or it's actually been reduced. We see some major federal programs, you know, that we're primarily a grant funded organization. We have historically been. One of our decisions going quite a ways back was that we're going to stay grant funded as much as possible, because leaving, you know, things like fundraising, fund development within the community for organizations that were smaller, that weren't necessarily capable of maintaining or executing a federal grant. And what we've seen is we're starting to have to move into this area of fundraising as well, because those revenues aren't there anymore. And we're seeing, you know, we closed two transitional housing units a couple years ago for our homeless program. At the same time, you know, that we're opening permanent supportive housing units. This is because this is how the funding goes. And it's not because we didn't see a need. It's not because we didn't have massive waiting lists. It's because literally that funding, those revenue streams are drying up.
What about the future? Looking forward, we've got a Republican president-elect. We've got Republican control of the U.S. House, U.S. Senate. The state of Wisconsin is in Republican hands. I mean, I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but is there any inclination on what happens with funding for or agencies like Western Dairyland, or even for grant opportunities for Clear Vision?
I'm happy to address that. I think that one of the things that one of the kind of misconceptions that we sometimes have is that, you know, it's Democrats solely that want to fund anti-poverty initiatives. And what we actually have seen is that within the state, for example, Paul Ryan has actually been a pretty big supporter of community action agencies locally and block grants as they come in. We've seen some difficulty from Democratic administrations in some of our funding and willing to sort of axe some of the programs that are really crucial, especially to rural poverty. So we think that every new administration is a new opportunity, and we're hoping that we will see those new opportunities arise, and we'll certainly adapt in whatever way we can to make sure we're still addressing the needs of our clients.
Mike Huggins, very quickly, you had a grant to help you with this project. Is it you guys fully funded with the?
We use that to match funding from the city and the county and the school district and the city county health department and private business and so forth. I want to go, though, that it's more than funding. Every community has assets, and I think part of the process will help us to identify those assets. It's the old thing. You do what you can where you are with what you have, and that's what we'll see come out of that process. Maybe grants, maybe local funding, maybe some type of volunteer idea that we haven't really put together yet.
All right. Well, thank you all so much. It's very interesting. The next meeting is December 1st at Grace Lutheran Church in Eau Claire. I'm Rich Kramer. I appreciate everyone for listening. Thanks to my guests, Mike Huggins, Sheng Zhang, Colin Hawkins, and Sarah Ferber. We'll have another discussion next Monday morning. Thanks for listening.